Chapter 8. While the more courageous of the youngsters played in and out of the large-mouthed caves, I early learned that such caves were unoccupied. No one slept in them at night. Only the crevice-mouthed caves were used, the narrower the mouth the better. This was from fear of the preying animals that made life a burden to us in those days and nights. The first morning, after my night's sleep with Lop-Ear, I learned the advantage of the narrow-mouthed caves. It was just daylight when old Saber-Tooth, the tiger, walked into the open space. Two of the folk were already up. They made a rush for it. Whether they were panic-stricken, or whether he was too close on their heels for them to attempt to scramble up the bluff to the crevices, I do not know. But at any rate they dashed into the wide-mouthed cave wherein Lop-Ear and I had played the afternoon before. What happened inside there was no way of telling, but it is fair to conclude that the two folk slipped through the connecting crevice into the other cave. This crevice was too small to allow for the passage of Saber-Tooth, and he came out the way he had gone in, unsatisfied and angry. It was evident that his night's hunting had been unsuccessful, and that he had expected to make a meal off of us. He caught sight of the two folk at the other cave mouth, and sprang for them. Of course, they darted through the passageway into the first cave. He emerged angrier than ever and snarling. Pandemonium broke loose amongst the rest of us. All up and down the great bluff, we crowded the crevices and outside ledges, and we were all chattering and shrieking in a thousand keys. And we were all making faces, snarling faces. This was an instinct with us. We were as angry as Saber-Tooth, though our anger was allied with fear. I remember that I shrieked and made faces with the best of them. Not only did they set the example, but I felt the urge from within me to do the same things they were doing. My hair was bristling, and I was convulsed with a fierce, unreasoning rage. For some time old Saber-Tooth continued dashing in and out of first the one cave, and then the other. But the two folk merely slipped back and forth through the connecting crevice and eluded him. In the meantime the rest of us up the bluff had proceeded to action. Every time he appeared outside we pelted him with rocks. At first we merely dropped them on him, but we soon began to whiz them down with the added force of our muscles. This bombardment drew Saber-Tooth's attention to us, and made him angrier than ever. He abandoned his pursuit of the two folk, and sprang up the bluff toward the rest of us, clawing at the crumbling rock and snarling as he clawed his upward way. At this awful sight, the last one of us sought refuge inside our caves. I know this, because I peeped out and saw the whole bluff side deserted, save for Saber-Tooth, who had lost his footing and was sliding and falling down. I called out the cry of encouragement, and again the bluff was covered by the screaming horde, and the stones were falling faster than ever. Saber-Tooth was frantic with rage. Time and again he assaulted the bluff. Once he even gained the first crevice entrances, before he fell back, but was unable to force his way inside. With each upward rush he made, waves of fear surged over us. At first, at such times, most of us dashed inside, but some remained outside, to hammer him with stones, and soon all of us remained outside and kept up the fusillade. Never was so masterly a creature so completely baffled. It hurt his pride terribly, thus to be outwitted by the small and tender folk. He stood on the ground and looked up at us, snarling, lashing his tail, snapping at the stones that fell near to him. Once I whizzed down a stone, and just at the right moment he looked up. It caught him full on the end of his nose, and he went straight up in the air, all 4 feet of him, roaring and caterwauling, what of the hurt and surprise. He was beaten, and he knew it. Recovering his dignity, he stalked out solemnly from under the rain of stones. He stopped in the middle of the open space, and looked wistfully and hungrily back at us. He hated to forego the meal, and we were just so much meat, cornered but inaccessible. This sight of him started us to laughing. We laughed derisively and uproariously, all of us. Now animals do not like mockery. To be laughed at makes them angry. and in such fashion our laughter affected Sabretooth. He turned with a roar, and charged the bluff again. This was what we wanted. The fight had become a game, and we took huge delight in pelting him. But this attack did not last long. He quickly recovered his common sense, and besides, our missiles were shrewd to hurt. Vividly do I recollect the vision of one bulging eye of his, swollen almost shut by one of the stones we had thrown. And vividly do I retain the picture of him as he stood on the edge of the forest, whither he had finally retreated. He was looking back at us, his writhing lips lifted clear of the very roots of his huge fangs, his hair bristling, and his tail lashing. He gave one last snarl and slid from view among the trees. And then such a chattering as went up. We swarmed out of our holes, examining the marks his claws had made on the crumbling rock of the bluff, all of us talking at once. One of the two folk who had been caught in the double cave was part grown, half child and half youth. They had come out proudly from their refuge, and we surrounded them in an admiring crowd. Then the young fellow's mother broke through, and fell upon him in a tremendous rage, boxing his ears, pulling his hair, and shrieking like a demon. She was a strapping big woman, very hairy, and the thrashing she gave him was a delight to the horde. We roared with laughter, holding on to one another or rolling on the ground in our glee. In spite of the reign of fear under which we lived, the folk were always great laughers. We had the sense of humor. Our merriment was gargantuan. It was never restrained. There was nothing halfway about it. When a thing was funny, we were convulsed with appreciation of it, and the simplest, crudest things were funny to us. Oh, we were great laughers, I can tell you. The way we had treated Sabretooth was the way we treated all animals that invaded the village. We kept our runways and drinking places to ourselves by making life miserable for the animals that trespassed or strayed upon our immediate territory. Even the fiercest hunting animals we so bedeviled that they learned to leave our places alone. We were not fighters like them. We were cunning and cowardly, and it was because of our cunning and cowardice, and our inordinate capacity for fear, that we survived in that frightfully hostile environment of the younger world. Lop-Ear, I figure, was a year older than one. What his past history was he had no way of telling me, but as I never saw anything of his mother I believed him to be an orphan. After all, fathers did not count in our horde. Marriage was as yet in a rude state, and couples had a way of quarreling and separating. Modern man, what of his divorce institution, does the same thing legally. But we had no laws. Custom was all we went by, and our custom in this particular matter was rather promiscuous. Nevertheless, as this narrative will show later on, we betrayed glimmering adumbrations of the monogamy that was later to give power to, and make mighty such tribes as embraced it. Furthermore, even at the time I was born, there were several faithful couples that lived in the trees in the neighborhood of my mother. Living in the thick of the horde did not conduce to monogamy. It was for this reason, undoubtedly, that the faithful couples went away and lived by themselves. Through many years these couples stayed together, though when the man or woman died or was eaten, the survivor invariably found a new mate. There was one thing that greatly puzzled me during the first days of my residence in the horde. There was a nameless and incommunicable fear that rested upon all. At first it appeared to be connected wholly with direction. The horde feared the northeast. It lived in perpetual apprehension of that quarter of the compass. And every individual gazed more frequently, and with greater alarm in that direction than in any other. When Lop-Ear and I went toward the northeast to eat the stringy-rooted carrots, that at that season were at their best, he became unusually timid. He was content to eat the leavings, the big tough carrots and the little ropey ones, rather than to venture a short distance farther on to where the carrots were as yet untouched. When I so ventured, he scolded me and quarreled with me. He gave me to understand that in that direction was some horrible danger, but just what the horrible danger was his paucity of language would not permit him to say. Many a good meal I got in this fashion, while he scolded and chattered vainly at me. I could not understand. I kept very alert, but I could see no danger. I calculated always the distance between myself and the nearest tree, and knew that to that haven of refuge I could outfoot the tawny one, or old saber-tooth, did one or the other suddenly appear. One late afternoon, in the village, a great uproar arose. The horde was animated with a single emotion, that of fear. The bluff side swarmed with the folk, all gazing and pointing into the northeast. I did not know what it was, but I scrambled all the way up to the safety of my own high little cave before ever I turned around to see. And then, across the river, away into the northeast, I saw for the first time the mystery of smoke. It was the biggest animal I had ever seen. I thought it was a monster snake, upended, rearing its head high above the trees and swaying back and forth. And yet, somehow, I seemed to gather from the conduct of the folk that the smoke itself was not the danger. They appeared to fear it as the token of something else. What this something else was, I was unable to guess. Nor could they tell me. Yet I was soon to know, and I was to know it as a thing more terrible than the tawny one, than old saber-tooth, than the snakes themselves, than which it seemed there could be no things more terrible. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.